Hello, I'm talking today to Tom Evans, and if I read what I found on his or one of his websites, Tom is a whole brain thinker and whole mind connector, author, wizard of light bulb moments and creative catalyst. And I think as writers we can all do with one of those at some time or another. Tom's written several books, one of which is called Blocks, and that's what we're going to talk to him about today. Tom, if it's all right, at the end of the call, I'll give out your website, or you can do that, if that's okay.
That sounds great, and hi, Eileen.
Good to speak to you. I've been fascinated trawling through your site, because there's so much stuff there. It's like, I ought to try that. So why don't you tell me how you got to where you are now, because you have kind of a very varied history, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got to say it's a happy accident, because you couldn't plan what I'm doing right now. I'm a BBC trained broadcast engineer, and I spent 25 years in high-tech industries of broadcasting, television, radio, and latterly the internet. And in my mid-40s, I wrote a book that I wasn't planning to write, called 100 Years of Ermyntrude, which is a book of poetry. Mm-hmm. And being a techie, I made it into a PDF, because that's the only way you could do ebooks at the time. And then I made it into an MP3, an audio version. If you search on the internet, you can get listen to it for free. There's a video version knocking around somewhere. And then it was too small to put into print, so I wrote two sequels to it about a year later and made a print version, which was three entangled tales, all written in poetry. And then about a year later, when the iPhone came out, I made an iPhone app version of it as well.
Being a techie, that all comes naturally to
exactly,
you.
Exactly, yeah. And I love testing out new technology on my own stuff. So
yeah.
So that was it, really. It was a project I didn't expect to do. Oh, a little side journey with it. I ended up walking around in a bra for 26 miles around London with 15,000 women as a result of writing it. All these things you don't expect to do.
That's quite a result.
Exactly. Well, it touched on breast cancer. And I basically made an approach to Walk the Walk charity locally, and they started driving loads of traffic to my site. So I gave all the proceeds away from the book to them. And then they said, well, would you come and walk around London with us? You know, they only invite about 500 women, 500 men on the out of the 15,000 women. So I did that.
Fantastic.
But what happened then was most unexpected. People started approaching me saying, well, Tom, you've written a book. Can you help me write my book? And yep. Initially, it was from a mechanistic perspective. You know, how do you go about the publishing process? How do you do all this techie ebook stuff? But what happened was more and more people came to me that had obviously they had creative blocks. They had a great idea, but they'd procrastinate. Creativity would run dry, and I just had no tools in my kit bag to deal with them. So I went and did some NLP and some hypnosis, and even ended up doing some past life regression. Would you believe?
Yeah.
And I found that I could really help people that came along. And all of a sudden, before I knew it, I'd become an author's mentor, but specialising in the creative blocks.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a new career as a result of doing it, which I have to say has just been so enjoyable. And mainly not because I've helped so many people write books, but I've helped so many people through blocks. And I'd say that in every single instance, when someone's turned up with writer's block, it's really been a life block masquerading as writer's block.
As writer's block.
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting, as I say, looking through your different sites, because you've obviously got a huge array of tools in your toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
And having taught stress management, I know that what suits one at one time doesn't necessarily suit them at another or suit somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very interesting that you've got all these different things which you can then apply to particular people's problems.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell us a bit more about the book?
Well, the book starts off by... the thing that keeps people really going is having a goal. And the first thing... I write about in the book is you know, deciding what you're going to write and why you're going to write it.
Mm.
And if you've got sort of high level goals, it seems that things conspire with you to help you finish off the book. So, for example, the question I always ask all my clients is, what would you like, and be selfish about this as a result of writing the book, and
Yeah.
think really high, and then think about the readers and how the readers are going to benefit.
Do you think the why is more important than the what?
Yeah, absolutely, because we can make the what many things. So, for example, some people might come to me saying they want to write a non-fiction book in business, and they've got this idea of, capturing their process. Everyone's got this domain expertise, haven't they? What the things that they know. And basically, that most a lot of people would think of writing a textbook, which it would mirror, let's say, the same process they might go through in a workshop or working with clients one to one. And often I say to them, well, if the result you want is why, perhaps what you could do is write a fiction book around the non-fictional subject, because that then the metaphor would actually end up and giving you a better end result. So it's not de rigueur, it's not it doesn't work in every single case, but a lot what I like to do is to switch things around a little bit, and also some people find it hard to write textbook. They might find it easier to write a story, if you know what I mean. Or some people can't write a story, they might find it easier to write a textbook. I work a lot also with dyslexic authors who have trouble writing at all, and what I get them to do is to speak their book and dictate it.
That's interesting because the first book that I helped somebody with was a young woman with mental health problems, and she found it much easier to talk than to write. So she used to send me recordings, bits of recordings, and I would transcribe them and, kind of move bits about to help her create the book. So it's not just that there's not just one way of dealing with this writing process, is it?
Yeah, and I tell you, it's sort of really good that a little tip that I teach a lot of writers, especially when they're writing something which is slightly autobiographical, is to change the person they write it in. So sometimes, let's say you'd normally write something autobiographical in the first person, actually writing it in the third person can help a lot. And then you can also transcribe the whole setting of the book. So let's say you were writing a book, I don't know, about your relationship with your mother and your relationship with your children. You could take that into the jungle and invent a fictitious troop of elephants or something like that, if a troop of elephants is the right collective noun. But so you write it about a completely different type of subject, but it's very allegorical, and that can work very, very well to get around those sort of emotional blocks that people might have
Yeah,
associated
because
with.
some of the situations that people write about are very hurtful still, aren't they? Even though they're kind of old situations.
And people might still be alive, that they want to write about. So actually, just changing names and settings and that sort of stuff, but still getting the point across, can be a very effective way of accessing these wonderful stories and getting them out there.
What other kind of blocks do you think people have in
Well, they tend to
going
be.
from idea to publication?
Yeah, I think a lot of them tend to be set up in childhood. That idea of being ridiculed. So typical fears you come across: the fear of being ridiculed, and maybe a teacher marked your essay down at school or something like that. I had a situation where I was, because I was quite bright, I was made to be Jesus in the nativity play at school, but no one actually asked me could I act, and it was obvious after the first rehearsals I couldn't do, so they demoted me to an innkeeper, and all I had to say was there's no room at the inn. I couldn't manage doing that, so I ended up on the back row of the angel chorus with no wings. So I managed to go from Jesus to a demoted angel. And I think as a result of that, later on in life, when I cleared my fear of being on stage, I can associate it with that experience. And it's experiences like that that can stop people. Another one that's quite subtle, which is at the opposite end of the spectrum, is fear of success. And I'll give you a personal story there as well. In my techie days, I built and sold two companies, and the two times I was most financially successful in my life were the two times when I was most stressed. So I'd kind of equated stress and success together. So what you do then is you procrastinate, and you serve others before you. I found for 2 or 3 years I was not writing things at all, and I'd run this thing in my head that the best way I could help my clients was to help them write their books and not to write mine instead. And of course, that's a ridiculous position, because by writing your own books, you learn a lot more about the industry and you can help your clients even more. But I ran that script in my head, and I ran a very su a success avoidance strategy very successfully for 2 years.
I think as well as this, it's not just success. Certainly for me, often it's been about getting bigger, if you see what I mean. That, the growing, because I've been quite successful over the last few years to kind of contracting my business, and it's only this year that Spirit has clouted me over the head and said, "Your vision's too small," basically.
Yeah, I've been told off a few times for people. I've been told, "We're giving you all this stuff, why are you not getting it
Why are
out
you not
there?"
doing it? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of holes, isn't there, that you can fall down.
For sure, yeah. But I think I'm over it now. I'm finally over it and enjoying it thoroughly in my latest book. And most of the things I write tend to be Trojan horses. And you asked about blocks. You know, what is blocks really about? Well, it's a book about writer's block, but really it's about people living and fulfilling their own magnificence, but masquerading as a book on writer's block. And the book I wrote after that on Lightbulb Moments is How Do You Connect With Your Muse? And some people might say, well, that's their source or how they channel. But I didn't write a book on channeling. I wrote a book on Lightbulb Moments, so entrepreneurs would pick it up and that sort of stuff. So I want this stuff, if you like, some of these spiritual practices to be usable in the real world in very, very serious business contexts as well.
I watched the interview that you did with Christine Miller on the Light Bulb Moments, and there's masses of good stuff in there. I mean, I would encourage anyone who listens to this to go take a look at your sites, because there's just so many ideas. I mean, I was on eCademy this afternoon, checking you out again, and I was kept scrolling down the page and scrolling down the page and thinking, well, there's a whole interview just on this one page, really, because you're kind of going in so many interesting directions.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's about 30 years of pent up creativity all coming out in a big spurt. It
It's got to come out somewhere.
is.
It has to come out somewhere. The other thing that I picked up on originally on your site was your use of mind mapping, which I quite I did have a go, probably back in the 80s, to use mind mapping, and I dropped it off, and that was one of my blocks, because of course quite a lot of mind mapping is the pictures, and I'm not brilliant at the pictures, and I kept thinking, these aren't working. Why aren't these working? I'm not going to do this anymore. So how useful, you were talking about mind mapping a book. So how would you go about doing that?
Well, I think it's right that a lot of mind maps can be quite graphical, and I can't draw and I can't even read my own writing, so I tend to use software to do my mind maps. But I do get I think they're really useful for a couple of reasons. One is going back to dyslexic authors, they find it really useful to mind map. And what I've done is I created loads of really good templates that I use with my clients. And the templates work on the semantics of our neurology. So, for example, if you're telling a story, we tell stories in this forward linear time. So all my mind maps for storytelling are done like clock faces. So they go in the rotation of a clock. Whereas I've got some mind maps that deal with unblocking, and they go back the other way. So there's some clever encodings you can do on the mind map with different colours. They're also very good to have in your visual field. So any book that I'm working on, I will do a mind map of all the chapters, and I'll print it out and shove it on a wall somewhere. And what it seems to do is, even if you don't look at it every day, it seems to just be in your unconscious mind, and you become very lucky around content that is really useful for you. And so, yeah, I think mind maps a great tool. If you're not used to software, though, they can kind of kick you back into left brain mode. So when I'm doing my creative writing courses, I get everyone to do them on pen and paper, 'cause, But the reason they work really, really well is that they give the left and right brain something to do at the same time. So the left brain kind of says, "I'm doing the maps around here, leave me to do the navigation." And the right brain, while it's busy, sneaks in and becomes creative. And there's a few rules and a few semantics. And once you learn those rules, then you can get some great results from mind mapping.
I've seen some wonderful mind maps, well, particularly in Tony Boothan's book, but it's I do think it did work for me. I just was very bad at the pictures, and I kind of dropped it, which was stupid, I suppose.
Yeah, and again, I don't draw on my map. If I'm working software-wise, I might include a few images. Yeah. In fact, let me tell you a story about mind mapping just to show you how useful it is. I was stuck when I was writing the Lightbulb Moment book. I was stuck on chapter 9, and I think I was going to use a chapter from the Blocks book on food and what foods promote Lightbulb Moments, and I got completely stuck with it. And so what I did was I used one of Tony Buzan's techniques, and I drew a little light bulb in the middle of a piece of paper, and then on one branch I put the word light, the other branch I put the word bulb, and the other branch I put the word moment. And if you do free associated mind mapping, it takes you in directions you weren't expecting. So from bulb you'd go to Amsterdam, or to go to Tulip and then to Amsterdam. From moment, I remembered that a moment isn't just a moment in time, but it's a moment around a lever, around a fulcrum. It's a force. And then from light, my mind just went off in a completely different direction. And I realized that light can be split into spectrum. So if light can be split into a spectrum and different colors, then so could thought. And then thought might have different colors or different flavors. And as a result of writing of that mind map, I completely cleared my writer's block, wrote a chapter I wasn't expecting to write. And a month after I finished the draft of that book, I wrote a whole new book I wasn't even planning to write. And now I've built a whole site around that whole idea. So they can be really freeing when you get stuck. Or you can use them in the process, if you know what I mean, to map out chapters and the reader journey and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Some great stuff that you're passing on. I hope anybody listening to this realizes the value of what Tom's passing on. We have a few minutes left. Do you want to just go through your website addresses, Tom, and where people can reach you on Twitter?
Yeah, I masquerade under the character known as the Bookwright, which is playwright but with a book in front of it. And I realised I picked up that name because I don't just work on the book, I work on all the other things that are around it, you know, all the things that might stop the book coming out, for example, all the psychology in a person that might stop the book coming out, and the mechanics that might stop the book coming out. And also, a book nowadays can be many things. It can be an ebook, it can be an app, it can be an autoresponder sequence. So tomevans.co is the main website for me, but you'll find me under Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook under /thebookwright. And there is a website called The Bookwright as well, which is where I blog about author-related things. I've got a couple of other sites as well. One is the latest project I've just finished called bendingtime.info. And this has got a whole suite of tools and techniques on it of how you can get more things done in less time. And the Flavors of Thought book morphed into a whole new therapeutic school that I've just launched called recipesforfreshthinking.com.
Yes, I looked at that, and that looked like a lot of fun.
That's really where the main direction of my work now, and it came as a direct result of doing that mind map when I was stuck in that writing that book, and I really didn't expect it. And all my writing now is going down that completely in that direction. I've just finished the sequel to Flavors of Thought, by the way, which is going to come out shortly.
Right, well, that may be the next conversation to have with you, Tom.
That'd be great.
When that comes out. Thank you very much for your time today. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I can see there's lots more conversations to be had with you down the road. So again, thanks for being with me.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you so much, Arlene.